and had a considerable amount of success in adapting themselves to local institutions and winning over converts in various lands. There were numerous Nestorians among exactly how practicing they were through among the Turkish and even among some of the Mongol tribes of Central Asia. It received the recognition as an imperial religion in the Tang Empire of China, which is that it was funded by the imperial government. It was accepted by the Chinese emperor as a proper faith. They also had communities in Iran, and they were constantly in contact with their Western co-religious, especially through monks. So these seemed to be the fellows who were the main agents of transmission. And what they probably were reporting was a battle that was fought somewhere near Samarkand in 1141, where a fellow named Yalan Tashi, who ruled a confederation of Turkish tribes, which included a number of Nestorians, had apparently inflicted a defeat on opposing Turkmen tribes related to the Seljuk Turks, who were primarily Muslims. And somehow this report or this event, we think, is behind the initial reports coming to Western Europe that there's this great figure in the East who's going to come, almost an apocalyptic figure, who would come and restore Jerusalem to the Christians, would usher in a new age. And the irony about these reports, and they continue, we'll encounter in 1165, Pope Alexander III gets letters reputedly from, again, this legendary king. And in the case of Alexander III, he actually sends out a mission. He sends out his physician, a fellow named Philip, Philippus Magister in Latin, Philip the Master, who was sent out onto the steppes of Central Asia with a small retinue, with letters in Latin. I don't know what any good that would do, to try to contact this fellow. And, of course, they disappear and they're never heard of. And these reports coming out of Central Asia, in a strange way, reflect both the hopes and the fears of Western Europeans. On the one hand, there's this whole apocalyptic tradition that this will be the final judgment. This is the ruler who will mark the new age. You can also link it up with images of Exodus and images of the conquest of Canaan, the vindication of suffering. And all these images are invoked. Or on the other hand, they could be the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the devil's horsemen, which is eventually how the Mongols are often remembered. But in any case, these were very heady notions. And they became especially popular in the period after the Second and Third Crusades, with repeated defeats in Outremer. And the fact that the Byzantine Empire was no longer in a position to play that role as the great lord of the East who would make everything possible for the Christians. Certainly it's not in a position to play that role after 1204. So when the Mongols burst upon the scene, and that is in the 1220s when they come crashing into the eastern borderlands of the Islamic world, the immediate reaction of these reports, which are coming from two sources, one are from the Nestorians and the other are from the Assassins, that Shiite sectarian group that's always running around trying to kill Sunni religious and political leaders, they're here. Prester John's here, or Genghis Khan is sometimes identified with David, the supposed son of Prester John. And through much of the 13th century, you get this curious reaction of Western Europeans to this Mongol attack. And there's a whole series of missions and envoys sent out to Genghis Khan, or actually more to his descendants, to try to forge an alliance. Well, with those visions and expectations, which tell you a great deal about the religious motivation behind the Crusades, and it's the same kind of expectations you would have seen in that children's crusade that we're going to go off and somehow be vindicated. Let's shift over to the Mongols themselves and take a look at the Mongols and exactly what they represented, because they were far from the apocalyptic Christian figures that were hoped for in Western Europe. Well, the Mongols, or the tribe of Mongols on the upper Amur River today, who were the kinsmen of Genghis Khan, who was born Temujin in 1167, were really a rather minor tribe. They're really at the far eastern end of this very long corridor of steppes that stretched across the Eurasian landmass. And today they would be located on what is now the Russian and Chinese border, and would be occupying part of what is now eastern Mongolia.